I'm very happy to have our next storyteller come here. She is an incredibly funny actress who has lived an amazing life, and I would be happy to have her here even if I weren't promised to be married to her. So please welcome Tabitha Hall.
I always play a character on stage, but tonight I'm being me, Tabitha. Oh! Okay. So, I am a runner. I run away, I run to chaos, and I run from chaos. I'm always looking for that greener side, but it's always the same, because I take me to me wherever I go. When I ran away from home, or as my mother likes to put it, when I was kicked out for satanic worshiping, but that's a whole nother story. I ran to escape, and it was only a 45-minute drive, but it was still an escape nonetheless, away from home in my car. My 1900 Vega, but it was still my car. And it was a Vega that my friend nicknamed the Vaginal Vega because he shaved off all of his pubes and he glued them to the top. My baby. And so I had friends in this new town that I went to. I had friends who were in bands, and I had some girlfriends who went to St. Mary's Catholic School. And I also had some friends who were drug makers, drug dealers, drug runners, drug sellers, drug users. Now, my second experience of running was shortly after me and my friend Lindsay, who went to St. Mary's Catholic School. First of all, I have to say that, okay, Lindsay and I were totally different from the norm of St. Mary's. We carried around shellacked chicken's feet, real chicken feet. Friend from school had chickens from her farm, and we asked for the feet, and she said, okay. So we got them, we shellacked them. I named mine Piwacket, and Lindsay named hers Vinegar Tom. So we would take these chicken feet, and we would go to different girls' rooms, and we'd stick them underneath the doors, and we'd pull out rugs or notebooks or whatever else, and then the girls would scream and then come running after us because they knew that we were weird. And then we would just hightail it back to Lindsay's room and lock the door and just laugh and laugh and laugh. Oh, it was good times. And then Lindsay and I went tramping around in the woods one day, and we found this dead dog. And there wasn't much of the carcass left to the dog, just some hair and the bones. And we decided, oh, hey, let's take this back to St. Mary's. We'll throw it in a pot in the student's cooking lounge and make it into a necklace, the spinal cord. So we go do that, and as we're cooking it, we notice this terrible, pungent stench. And it is all over St. Mary's. And we know the girls know that it's us, because it's only us who would do something like that. So anyway, we finish cooking it. No, boiling it. Removing the hairs and the flesh. And we dry it out, and then we nail polish it, glow in the dark, and then we string it onto a leather thing, and then we've got our little necklaces and our little chicken's feet. Oh, my water.
Wow. Yeah.
So then, at that point, the girls in the school decided that they were going to retaliate, and how they did that was they told the administration that Lindsay and I were in the parlor with a live chicken, and that we bit the chicken's head off, flung it around the parlor, and blood spurted all over the walls and the pictures. And apparently, I guess we cleaned it up too, because I never saw it, neither did Lindsay. So there Lindsay is. She's kicked out, expelled, and I'm banned from the school itself. Hence, Lindsay moves in with me. Good times, though, because it led us to hanging up with the Moe and Curly, or the Curly and Moe of the drug world. Actually, their names were Donnie and Brooks. They both considered themselves philosophers, but in all actuality, they were just drug makers, sellers, and scam artists. In my entire time of knowing them, there was always a crime bureau of investigation car sitting out in front. Always there, always watching. Somebody in there, lots of setups in their TVs, antennas, blah, whatever. And so my first experience with cocaine was with Donnie and Brooks, and so was Lindsay. And, they're a cocaine seller. He was this big, large black man, bald head, wore gold suits, gold jewelry everywhere, and his name was Goldfinger. And he would come in with his bodyguards wearing all black, and he was packing heat, and it was kind of cool, but it was still kind of scary at the same time. But again, good times. And also through Brooks and Donnie, accidentally, we ended up doing, heroin and Dilaudids. Dilaudids being the synthetic form of heroin, if anyone does not know that, but maybe not. Never mind. Anyway, so Brooks and Donnie, they had this check and drug scam going on in different states. They had various disguises and IDs, and Lindsay and I decided, hey, you need some help? You need some assistance? We'd like to get in on this. And they were very up to it because we were virgins. They were hoping, but never got around to that, thank God. So on one particular day, we have it all worked out. We're going to go to this place. We're going to do this, and then we're going to get out of town. Okay, so Donnie and Lindsay and I drive her brand new Subaru that her father just gave her to the State Department of Records in Raleigh with her car filled with stolen items and drugs. I honestly don't remember where the stolen items came from, but it was all home entertainment stuff and lots of drugs. Anyway, and then after that, we were going to head to D.C., and we were going to get rid of the stolen items and some of the drugs and just have a good time and then come back. So my job, my official title was the getaway driver. And I was to stay in the car and wait for them. So they went into the building of State Department of Records, and I spent some time going through the glove compartment or into my purse pretending like I'm gathering my paperwork in case any cameras were spying on me. To go in there and do something. Well, it's been about 30 minutes, so I start getting nervous. It's been way, way too long, so I decide that I'm going to go back to home base, 201 Ash Avenue, Raleigh, North Carolina, if anybody wants to see this place. Turns out, as Lindsay is checking out of the State Department of Records with a stolen birth certificate of a deceased baby, she gets caught. She gets busted because she doesn't have her story straight. And Donnie gets his, but he gets tired of waiting for Lindsay, so he decides to go through a back door and hightail it right through the woods. So then we catch up, me and Donnie do, get a phone call, Lindsay's arrested, and me, the getaway driver, has to drive her car to go bail her out. Now we have 30 days before her court appearance, and she's got a high, huge fine hanging over her head. And so we decide that we're going to go ahead and road trip it anyway to D.C. and whatever you do with this stuff, make a bajillion dollars to pay the fine off. And the trip itself was okay. You know, we were all on speed, crystal meth, and some cocaine. And I was driving, staying focused on the road very well. With them, Lindsay and Donnie, in the back scheming and plotting the whole time. When we got to D.C., Donnie sold most of the items in the back of the car, and then a cop pulls up right as this is happening. Of course, go figure. And so they want to question Donnie downtown because they wanted to question Donnie downtown. Okay, whatever. I lost my thought on that. So Donnie comes, I don't know how he tells the cop, but he comes to the window of the car, and he says, okay, take all those drugs, all those Dilaudids, there's maybe 500 of them. And shove them up in your cookies down in pants. I don't care. Get rid of them. Just get rid of the. So we're up in the room trying to stick them and down and in and everything like that. And then he goes downtown and we follow him. Since I'm the getaway driver, of course, and the one without a record, I'm appointed to go in and bail him out if need be. But for some reason, Donnie talks his way out of it and he's free. We get in the car and we leave D.C. Okay, so that was two close calls within 36 hours. It's time for me to move on. I need to run to get away from this running, getaway, running. I mean, come on, think about it. Trouble without payoff? Why stick around? So after this, I started hanging out with a bunch of Raleigh bands. I get asked to sing in a band, a punk rock band. We cut a demo. It was called Take a Bath, after my name, Tabitha. Terrible, horrible, horrible. I was the singer. And then I was requested by another band to be their roadie. Cool. They were going on tour with the Descendants. Anybody? Anybody? Okay. Roadie? So the band that I roadied for was called the Ugly Americans, and that name, oh my God, was so fitting. They were four of the ugliest. Honestly, I can't think of any more. No. Yeah, they were four of the ugliest people I have ever seen in my life. And not only did they look ugly, but by God, they stank. They stank like shit. They stank of ass. Of ass farts and vinegar feet. And it was hell getting back in that van knowing that that pungent odor was waiting for me. Now, my job was to be in charge of all the equipment and to be the night driver of this van that had Kiss posters taped in all the windows of the van except for the front windshield and the two first sides right there. So as you can imagine, there's a bajillion blind spots everywhere. And there were many close calls, mainly motorcyclists who would practically shove their fists through the van to let me know that they were there. Scare the shit out of me. Okay, so four ugly Americans. Two of them were total nincompoop nerds. And one was a geek, Sweet Danny, and then there was Large Marge. Large was short. Large for short. Large was far from short. He's a huge black man. He's the drummer for the band, and he wore 12 noose earrings in each ear. He had a black fro with a blonde dyed lightning bolt down the and he drives semis for a living. So Large was my favorite to hang out with because he was so laid back and he didn't say mean things about anybody else in any of the other bands that we were hanging with. And we decided that I was going to become his personal drum roadie. And he would help me out with the other things that I had to do, including loading equipment in and out of venues and driving at nighttime. And it worked out great. We'd drink beer once we got to the venue. We'd load up, load out, whatever, get set up. Then he'd play and I would hold his drums up for him because he was a double kick basser, or whatever you guys call it, who's in the music business, and so his drums constantly fell over. And then we'd drink some more, and he'd light up and get good and high, and then we'd go back to the van, and we'd either pass out or play possum because we didn't want to drive that night. It was a good setup. Okay, so both bands... We had this morning ritual. We were to meet for breakfast at Denny's in the town that we were to play that night in. So shortly into the tour, after many sexual affairs that the Descendants were having, because they were cute and rock stars, crabs came into the picture. You know, bees. Crabs came into the picture. And so... one of them, I can't remember. Oh, the drummer. He had hair just everywhere. There was no space anywhere. Just so he was picking crabs off here and here. And, I mean, it wasn't just confined to here. Anyway, they would go into the bathroom when they first got to the Denny's, and I shortly got in on this. But I didn't have crabs, okay, at that point. That's a whole nother story. And they would each pick a crab off, and they put it on the bathroom. countertop, and then they would just, and the crabs would race down these bathroom tops. I mean, it was fabulous. It was so fucking funny to me. And for all of you who know me, you know I love gross, potty, disgusting humor. So, yay, Descendants. Yay, crabs. Not on me. No. So, I had it good on that touring job. There was no pay, but hanging with Large, touring cross-country, crab races, and dating the bass player of the Descendants, what more could, let's say, a 19-year-old girl wish for? After the tour ended, I decided to head back out to San Francisco via Greyhound. Okay, I hate Greyhound. I don't know who just said yeah, but I hate them. I hate them with a passion. I hate public buses with a passion. I hate being confined in a box with 70 strangers for even 1 minute, let alone 4 fucking days. I hate the air freshener that they pump out of the windowsill things every 20 minutes. The smell of the bathroom Andy Gump box when the door opens. The smell of freaky poor strangers who like to talk. And their breath is so unbearable to a point where you just want to punch your fist right into their face and scream and cry because they don't know how bad they stink. Okay, maybe now I should confess that I have a very powerful sense of smell. I do. And if it's not the smell in the bus, then it's the people who won't shut up. They think that just because you're on public transportation that you want to hear everything that they're thinking about because that's the only reason why you ride a bus. But I have no patience for people who like to talk about themselves. You know the kind I'm talking about? The ones who call you up and leave a message saying, "Oh my God, Tabitha, I have such good news for you. I'm pregnant." You get it? You get it? Okay, maybe I've known this person for only 3 days or 3 months, but why is that good news for me? It's all about them. Anyway, God, I digress. Back to San Francisco. So I get there, and I hang with bands that I had housed previously at my home in Raleigh. And Verbal Abuse, DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, anybody? Texting the Horseheads? Anybody? Okay. Anyway, through DRI, I met the Hags, and they were a skateboarding gang of girls based in San Francisco called Team Hag. And I'm not quite sure why I was invited into this gang when I didn't have a skateboard, nor did I know how to skateboard other than just in a straight line. I think it may have been the time when I called one of the leaders a pussy, and because I was at a fight that night at a party, and I used bad languages and used drugs and knew many bands, but I think it was the pussy thing. I think she admired that part of me. Anyway, I decided that I was going to stay put for a while. I was tired of running, so I'll stop running with the skateboarding gang. Does that mean? Mm-hmm. Got that? Okay, good. So Aunt Jemima gave me my one and only homemade tattoo, these three dots right here. Can we get a close-up? Fabulous, Jay. Fabulous. So there's only 14 Hags to date. And as for the skateboarding part of the gang, the only time I saw one in use, other than skating to the liquor store for a 40-ouncer, was when Roxanne, then 7 months pregnant, was held up by knife point up against her belly for her malt liquor. So Roxanne and I chased after and hits him over the head with a skateboard, and bam, he goes down right away. So she picks up her malt liquor, thank God it didn't break. And she skates off, and I'm running right behind her, and then we hightail it back to her place, and then we tell all of the Hags and the other band guys what had happened, and then lo and behold, later on that night in the news, the cops are looking for a guy fitting Roxanne's description who committed a murder. Yeah, so... Yeah, well, one of the things of being a hag, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, so Roxanne, she had her baby prematurely. It was a healthy girl. Believe it or not, she was on so many different drugs the whole time being pregnant. It's incredible. And then... and then moved in with the leader of the Hags and her husband, the singer of MDC, Millions of Dead Cops, but probably means nothing to you. Anyway, so I squatted below with two other Hags and Jimbo. Now, Jimbo was a drug user and a seller who had an armory in his closet bedroom, which I didn't know about until later. Aunt Jemima and I would work the door for Jimbo and decide who's skank and who's not. Skank meaning withdrawing junkies who would be trouble for Jimbo, tip off cops by having a lot of people around, blah, 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 blah. So again, there was this vehicle outside of the apartment watching us. This time it was a van painted with the swirly different colors. I was going to say pasta, something. Anyway, but we knew we were being watched because there were black tinted windows. But the whole thing was really a nice setup. Free drugs, a place to stay for free, all up until the sheriff's department, the deputy comes out and physically evicts us. So we run, knowing that Jimbo's in his bedroom, and Jimbo is then taken away. The guns are seized, the drugs are seized, and he's gone. He's gone for good. He's still gone today. But then I was homeless. I was now then homeless. And I would bounce around from place to place. Sometimes I would babysit for Roxanne in exchange for a night to sleep. But it would always be me, baby, Roxanne in the bed. And she told me, if you ever roll over on top of my baby, I will fucking kill you, Tabitha. And she meant it. Oh, God, did she ever mean it. So I only did that maybe twice, and that was enough because I didn't sleep at all those nights. And then if I didn't do that, then I would hang out with my friend Lisa, and she worked graveyard shifts at Phone Fantasy in the gay part of San Francisco. So I would spend part of the night listening in on phone calls and just laughing and laughing and wondering how they did it and what they looked like and stuff like that. And the rest of the time I'd crawl up on the couch and then I'd sleep for the rest of the night. And then there were times where I had nowhere to go. So I would get high on heroin, and I would either sleep in a doorway with my little baby hunting pocket knife that I picked up somewhere on the road and not out and not really care if anything happened to me because, hey, I was on heroin. And if it wasn't that, then I'd sleep on top of vans or underneath cars, hoping that I would wake up to the sound of it before it moved off. Anyway, so I got tired of this. Yeah. I got tired of life, and I got tired of staying put, even though I was bouncing around from place to place. So I called some friends down in Los Angeles, and they said, come on down. We'll take care of you. What do? I jump on a bus that very day, loaded on crystal, and I get on the Green Tortoise bus. Anybody? Green Tortoise?
Yeah.
Yeah! Now, for those of you who don't know about the Green Tortoise, it is a communal bus that took all its seats out and turned it into like these futon-like beds. And when you stepped on the bus, there was this funnel and a pipe into a clear plastic container where you would pee into, and there'd be this nice little black curtain around, and you could look at the driver and just, you know, hey, how's it going? Good, thanks. You? Yeah. Good. Okay. And I have never hung out with potheads or hippies before, but I have to say they are a pleasant group of people. Just totally. They were so nice, and they were respectful of each other's boundaries and my boundaries, and yet they passed around bags of seeds and dried fruits and pot. So there was no smoking on the bus. If you wanted to smoke, you had to get off the bus and do it at some stop. But, you know, we would share our beers, and then we would go to sleep, and it was the best night of sleep I'd had since my first night in San Francisco when I went back. So Los Angeles, nearing the end. I was there for 3 weeks. I worked for an insurance company. And I was bored. Bored, bored, bored. Here I am with this structured, non-chaotic life, and I don't know what to do with myself. Especially not having a car and having to bus it around, and you know how I feel about buses anyway. So I was ready to crawl out of my skin. And out of the blue, Large shows up, gives me a call, and he says, do you want to drive cross country with me in my truck? And I'll give you some money on the side. And I said, sure. So I packed what little I owned, very little, and put my cowboy hat on. It's crowned now. And snorted a line of crystal. Still in the picture. Popped in the Buzzcocks, and we headed east. We were free. I was free. I was back on the road, and it felt so great. And Large taught me how to drive in Arizona, in the petite part of the Grand Canyon. If anybody's ever been there, maybe I made this up. I dreamed it. I don't know, but I'm telling you, it was part of the Grand Canyon, and it was small. Now, I don't know if anyone here has ever driven an 18-wheeler, but it's not the easiest thing to do. Making wide load turns, having to angle the cab with the back wheels and not hit a light post or a pedestrian, that takes some major maneuvering and skill. Or there's the backing up, and I have this dyslexia with directions and math and turning wheels that go this way, hoping that the cab will go that way, but it always ended up being backwards, and so I'd always have to wake up Large saying, okay, I'm making a, I gotta back up, you gotta help me. Or I was also, my title on this trip was I was the navigational officer. I can't read a map or shit. So Large got a little taste of me and my dyslexia, but he was just so relaxed and the kindest man ever that he put up with it and just constantly laughed at me. And then I started getting tired of being on the road. We'd been, what, maybe 4 weeks or something? And from bouncing around on the cab, my neck and my head and everything just ached. And I was pissed off at the CB, totally pissed off at the CB, because and I can't understand a word they're saying, and I hated that. And Large totally knew what they were saying, and he would answer, what are you saying? Speak English. Why can't anybody speak English? So every time I turned it off, he would turn it back on. We need to know about the Smokies ahead. That kind of stuff. And so, me being so pissed off about my neck and everything hurting, not understanding the fucking truckers, and then having to use these trucker lounges for showers, playing Pac-Man, smoking, and just lounging with these people who had no teeth. There was never any women, and the women who were there, they were just eyeing me uncomfortably. And so I 86'd the truck stops, and I 86'd the CBs. I would no longer participate in that part of the truck world. I decided that once we hit Detroit, that I was going to hitchhike back east. So we get to Detroit, crummiest part of town. Go figure, huh? Mm-hmm. Detroit. I get out of the cab and I start walking and hitching. Large sees me, he catches me, puts me back in the cab and locks it. I don't know how he locks it without me not being able to get out, but I guess maybe it's one of those police kind of things, child locks or whatever. Anyway, Large, he comes back after he unloads Jerry Curl. Seriously, we seriously loaded Jerry Curl. That tells you how long ago this was. He came back with a six-pack. He told me to lay down in the bed in the cab. He popped in the go-go's, and I had the most relaxing night of my whole truck driving experience. So then we get back east. I'm home safely. I get my trucker's permit just in case. We might need to go back out on the road, and I feel like going again. But lo and behold, I have my first nervous breakdown. And I don't know. Could it be the running? I don't know. All this chaos? Who knows? Drugs? So I have my nervous breakdown, and through that, I found art. Yay. And through art, I end up going to the College of Santa Fe in New Mexico, and brief road trip there. Brother gets dysentery at a Dairy Queen in Texas, hallucinating, shitting in his pants. God bless him, and I paid no attention to him because I am getting there. And then stopping in another Dairy Queen with this other male who had a crush on me, and he was using the bathroom, and some customer opened the door, and I saw him taking a shit in his underwear. It was just a bad experience. So after that, I go to New York. Good times in New York, and then it's time for me to come out to L.A. I get sick of New York, and life is structured. Time to move on. So I come here. Yeah, I'm almost at the end. Okay, so as you know, I've passed, or as some of you may know, I've passed the 3-week mark. And though I have to take Los Angeles in 3-week chunks in order not to go insane thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be here forever, I just want to get to Montana, work with a veterinarian who's actually an Indian, be an assistant, learn the Native American, whatever, patience, serenity, calmness, not me. I can't say that my life is any less chaotic now than it has ever been. Let's just say that my life is a road trip and that I'm a runner. I run away. I run from chaos. I run to chaos. I'm always looking for that greener side. And it's always the same because wherever I go, I take me to me.